It's the Beckler and Shauna podcast, your daily download of X92.9's X Mornings with Beckler and Shauna.
Brought to you by Shane Holmes, offering affordable customization on your new home.
It's Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. I'm Beckler.
I'm Shauna.
This is the Beckler and Shauna Pisscast.
Yeah,
it's probably looking like a long pisscast in your app there, because it is. It's Tuesday, so we have a career day interview in the middle of this podcast with a friend of ours, actually one of my best buds, who is an eye surgeon. So we learned all about cutting the eyeballs. Yeah, we actually did talk specifically about that and other things. Also on the show today, another thing you can't look cool doing, Shauna would like to drive a supercar when she goes to Vegas, so we're going to help her pick one.
Yeah.
A new law that they're trying to bring in Florida involving kids and social media. We had a good discussion on this. Shauna caught people in Calgary being a bit soft, and you can't call out Vancouver and then not call us out when we're doing it.
I had to call us out. Yep. We're soft.
An etymology, and I don't know if you call this small town news, but a different take on small town news after your out of context clip.
One cup of potatoes, half a teaspoon of butter.
And then what?
That's riveting.
And then what?
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
I somehow came across the small town radio station yesterday, Beckler, from Renfrew, Ontario. And it is just delightful. Forget small town news. Small town radio is where it's at.
Small town radio is great.
Holy. And we've talked about small town radio before, and it's always delightful. But I got clicking around this website. First off, they host Radio Bingo.
Oh, nice.
Which is
great. That's a classic small town radio thing.
Oh, yeah. So you can play bingo live, and then if you win, I guess you mail your bingo card, and then they'll mail you a check for a few bucks, and that's all phenomenal.
Sweet.
They also broadcast the local garage sales.
Oh, yeah. I've worked at stations that did, like, garage sales and lost dogs and stuff.
Absolutely.
And
yep.
Yeah.
And then they have a deer hunt program. And I was like, what does that mean exactly? It's a 90-minute segment that airs every single day during deer hunting season.
90 minutes every day?
90 minutes every day. Apparently, it started with a 5-minute segment. They even describe this on the website. They talk about how this started as a 5-minute segment about deer hunting. And then I guess it was, people wanted it so bad that now it's 90 minutes every day during deer hunting season where they update you on what's going on with the deer hunt.
So what do they talk about for 90 minutes? Like who got what and like where they got it?
Mm-hmm. And they try different camps and they tell you about ways to deer hunt the most effectively. Wow. And it is a 90 minute.
Every single day.
Every day.
If you told me that was like an hour long weekend specialty program, I'd be like, okay,
sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. 90 minutes every day.
Every
prime
day.
Time.
Everybody needs to know, apparently, in Renfrew. And then they air the recipe of the day as well.
Oh, nice.
Which is just
phenomenal. Yes.
Also, like, I don't know if I can think of anything more riveting than.
Do they have a big birthday book?
The actual recipe. Probably.
How many people live in Renfrew?
No idea. I've seen it. I've heard of it, but don't remember.
8,000. Okay.
So
it's
there
not
you go.
That tiny even.
No.
Do you ever fantasize, Shauna, about like going to the smallest town with a radio station and like working the rest of your career there?
Yes. Sometimes
just, like,
I think about that.
No pressure at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no ratings. You just do the hunting program and Tradio. Tradio is a big one in small towns too.
It's huge as well. Yeah.
Where it's like, all right, that was Herman and he's got an old wheelbarrow for sale.
Yes.
For $25.
Yeah.
And his number is, and let's do that for a few hours.
And the recipe of the day is funeral potatoes.
Oh, I'd be so peaceful.
One cup of potatoes, half a teaspoon of butter.
And then what?
That's riveting.
And then what?
Please tell me more.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
Etymology with Shauna.
Well, after hearing the word eclipse 5,000 times over the last little bit here, I was like, okay, let's look into the etymology of eclipse.
Well, that's perfect. My youngest son, Brigham, we were looking at eclipse photos yesterday, and he said, have you guys ever done the etymology of eclipse? And I said, no, we haven't. So
nope.
This works out really well.
Well, perfect. We're on the same wavelength.
Yes.
So that's phenomenal. So eclipse comes from the Greek eclipsis, with ek meaning from and lepsis meaning to leave. Now, when you translate this, it literally means to forsake or abandon. And that's kind of what happens during the eclipse, is the sun or the moon abandons us. And that's what they truly believed, is that when that happened, it was the abandonment of the sun. So
wow.
But a lot of mythology and religious texts obviously reference eclipses, and it makes perfect sense because imagine back then when you have no idea what's going on and an eclipse happens, like you'd be like, there is...
That must have been the most terrifying experience for those people when they didn't understand orbits and, you know, when the next one is coming, that sort of thing. So all of a sudden it goes dark and the sun's gone.
Yeah.
Like somebody has angered the gods.
And that's seriously what they meant. So in Norse mythology, for example, Ragnarok is the great apocalypse that's supposed to bring the destruction of the world. So during that, a great wolf, this was the story, a great wolf who is chained up by the gods bursts free and his two wolf pups devour the sun and the moon in an event that sounds just like the eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
And that is part of the destruction of the world. So that's truly what they believe. When an eclipse happens, it's part of Ragnarok and the world is going to destruct. The Sumerians believed that during a lunar eclipse, the moon was actually being attacked by seven demons. So the belief was that the king got power from the sky. So an eclipse was seen as an assault on the king. And that was not good for anybody. So what they actually did is when they saw an eclipse, they would have a decoy king. That would kind of, they'd say, here, this is the king. Okay, so if you're going to kill the king or assault the king, this use this decoy king. And then after the eclipse was done, I guess they would essentially just poison this decoy king and be like, okay, you're done with now.
I was picturing like a scarecrow. It was a real person. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I was going to guess that there was probably some human sacrifice and stuff.
There always is.
The sun's gone. We got to kill someone to appease the gods.
Obviously.
And then you killed him and the sun comes back and obviously it worked, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that used to happen all the time. And they just dispose them and be like, okay, you're done. Dispose of the king is safe though. So that's good. And then of course there's the Bible in Revelation. I mean, there's a bunch of different lines that reference the eclipse, but I didn't know this. I don't know my Bible that well, but there's, for example, this quote, and I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal and lo, there was a great earthquake and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair and the moon became as blood, which is a reference to obviously mm-hmm. what an eclipse looks like. And there's many discussions of that in the Bible as well. So yeah, it was a big thing and it was obviously terrifying for everybody back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, like I've never seen a total eclipse, but it's supposed to be such a powerful experience even now when we know what's happening.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine what it was like for ancient peoples who didn't.
Nope.
Like this sounds all kind of ridiculous in hindsight, but if we were there, we would have been freaking out too.
Oh my right? Well, Matt, and you know, the temperature when it's in a total eclipse, like drops immediately like that. And the sun
animals
is just
go
gone.
Nuts and
I can't imagine.
Etymology with Shauna. The Beckler and Shauna podcast. Beckler and Shauna's career day.
This is our somewhat new segment where we talk to interesting people about their jobs. And our guest today works on one of the most sensitive and important parts of our bodies. Can you introduce yourself and tell us what you do?
Sure. My name's Ryan Yao. I'm an ophthalmologist in Calgary. I usually sometimes would say eye surgeon just to be a little more clear because most people don't really know what ophthalmologist totally is.
Right. Ophthalmologist is a big word.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Impossible to spell. lots of tequila bets that I have no one can spell, including doctors.
That's fine.
In the interest of transparency here, we should probably say that you're a friend of ours. You're a close friend of mine. So I'll know the answer to some of these questions, but I imagine some of it will be new. Do you want to start at the beginning? How did you decide that ophthalmology is what you wanted to do with your life?
Yeah, it was pretty early on. My uncle is a pretty famous, like world famous level researcher, scientist in vision sciences at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, Maryland. So that's kind of, you know, as a child going to his lab and seeing ultra cool, like world famous cutting edge stuff. That kind of piqued my interest in that area. And I have done research, but, you know, I was more of a people kind of person. So that led more to the medicine side of things. And I mean, you have to, if you're going to pursue careers like that, you find out pretty early, you got to start looking into it pretty early. So it's been a kind of a lifelong, you know, goal and dream of mine.
Is there ever a time where thinking about working with eyes, something that is that sensitive, freaked you out?
No. I mean, I guess even on a simple level, I've worn contacts before, but it is pretty freaky for, again, even within medicine. Even my sister, she's a plastic surgeon, sees people with arms like ripped off in augers, anything near the eye, or merge docs who see all kinds of gunshots. They see eye stuff and they just get like the heebie-jeebies. So yeah, most people, it's pretty weird. But no, to me, it's pretty cool. And when you see them really up close, they're really cool. So, no, eyes are great.
Like, even the first time you had to cut into one, that didn't freak you out?
No, I mean, you work your way up to it. Even in undergrad, I think I took a zoology course where I cut open a shark, cut open a big cat. And then you work, so you're like cutting open real people and that are dead. You just slowly work your way up to it.
So you've just, you start with animal eyeballs and then you work your way up to the human ones. And then at that point, it's just all the same.
Yeah, I think, I can't remember myself, but I think a lot of friends took cow's eyes and, you know, stab it into them like a cherry tomato, you know. And, pretty similar kind of sound and noise, too.
Wow.
Okay.
So what did your education look like? Like, how many years of schooling do you have and where did you start?
Yeah, you know, I graduated high school here in Calgary and I did my undergrad here in Calgary. That was 4 years. Did a Bachelor of Science and with an interest in research and a business minor. Then medical school is 4 years in Edmonton, and then residency is 5 years, and that was in U of A. So 13 years after high school.
Holy crap.
That's a lot of schooling.
Yeah, but it's fun.
Was it fun the whole time, or was it a real grind?
I mean, I was blessed to have just an amazing co-resident, and we honestly had the time of our lives, because it's like hanging out with your best friend every day, and yeah, it's the trenches, but residency for us was awesome. Like, yeah, you're tired, but, you know, we're single and young and having the time with it.
Are you earning money at all during that residency, or are you still, like, taking loans for that sort of thing?
By the time you hit residency, you can even start kind of paying off a little bit of student loan, but you're making a pseudo-living wage of sorts. Sometimes you do have to dip to do things you need to do, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, you are getting, you're a resident doctor. I can't remember what level that is for TV doctors. Grey's Anatomy, maybe? Enough to go to the bar sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
How many eye surgeries have you done then?
I do many types of eye surgeries, but like tens of thousands, maybe 15,000.
You've seen a lot of eyeballs. That's insane.
It's a lot of eyeballs.
What's the biggest mistake you've made in eye surgery? Have you ever botched an eye surgery?
Yeah, I wouldn't say botched. I mean, but obviously things can go wrong. And a lot of your outcomes sometimes, depending on what surgery you're talking about, or they just happen after the fact. But yeah, for sure, because you work with something, like the most common one that I do is cataract surgery. Mm-hmm. And everything is kind of held within this little, think of it like a little hammock. And it's like 4 microns thick, like 4 1,000ths millimeter. And sometimes no matter how good you are, the thing was doomed to fail because there was defect back there. And yeah, things will go sideways, especially, of course, when you're earlier. But you learn from it how not to have that happen again. And it will happen, but luckily, very few are devastatingly. You can, you know, go back and fix it to some degree. You'll never be able to rebuild that little capsule. Mm-hmm. But, you know, very devastating side effects are... you know, 1 in 5,000 or 10,000.
Okay. So, I mean, similar to our job, there aren't that many people who do what you do, just I think because of the barrier to entry. Like, how many ophthalmologists are there in Calgary?
Like 30.
30? Yeah. And do you guys all know each other?
Yeah, pretty much. There's some that kind of are a little bit more off the grid that don't do surgery. We don't see them as much because they're not officially, like I myself, I'm a assistant professor with the U of C, and it's, you know, there's academia and we're a group that shares the call. But we still know, you know, there's a few that are community ophthalmologists that are not doing surgery yet. I mean, they're still kind of trying to get their privileges. But yeah, we have rounds together and, you know, we have events together and it's all very cordial. We work together.
This is going to sound weird. Do you take out eyeballs fully? Like, is there...
Yeah. I mean, some people think it's like, you know, Looney Tunes where the eyeball's like, boom, and it's like hanging out there and you work on it like an engine. And okay, I'm going to plug it back in. But no, it's the eyeball is staying in the orbit, in the eye socket. But sometimes an eye is painful. It's done and it's still just causing misery. And yeah, you actually do cut the eye out and you put a prosthetic in.
Do people harvest eyeballs? What do you do with them? Or do they just go in the garbage? Like, what do you do with that?
No, I mean, if you want to sign your organ donor card, absolutely. It's very useful to have people's spent eyes mostly for the cornea. That's the clear part of your eye.
Yeah.
And that's the part that people can have ruined corneas, and it's like one of the most successful transplants you can do because it's very avascular. There's no other things that would cause reactions. It can. It's like a spare windshield, you know?
I didn't realize that, eyes are part of the thing that you can gift to somebody else.
Yeah, and one of the best things you can give.
Wow.
You're saying there's less. It's less likely to be rejected? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's super right. Successful.
There is a very thin living cellular layer at the back that's like an active pump to keep it clear. That can sometimes, but it's, you know, you plug in, you know, a heart or something. There's tons of things that'll cause reactions and you have to suppress them. But in the eye, it's mostly, again, like a nail, right? It's mostly just tissue with a very, very small part of it that's still alive for that part of the eye.
How steady are your hands?
They're steady. I mean, I think everyone could probably, it's a learned skill.
Okay.
And, you know, people talk about, well, it's not brain surgery. And even I would say I could, given time, do it. But I think it's like an approach. Like you have to have a mental attitude towards it. But the skill set, I think people can learn it. It's something you work under a microscope a lot. But like anything, you slowly get a little better and better. And it's not like people were born to be surgeons or not. There may be like 1% that just, you know, it's not for them physically.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, people can learn it.
Do you still get nervous doing surgeries? Did you ever get nervous or was it always just a very, again, like...
Yeah, because you talked about the mental attitude that you needed to take into it. What is that?
You just got to have a, you know, approach and be able to stay calm with it. And yeah, definitely tough cases. Or I mean, sometimes... You know, people think, oh, you know, ophthalmologists, they just push a button and something laser fires and they go home and like drink a macchiato. But, you know, we're on call. So, you know, people get in the fights and people's eyes will be blown open and industrial accidents will happen. People get shot and they blow their face off. And you come in and you're like, oh boy.
Oh,
there's
man.
This, like, there's this ball of mush. You're kind of like, you know, trying to slowly stitch together.
Holy crap.
And, yeah, and sometimes you have to pause and you're like, am I going to be able to do this or is this eyeball just coming out? But that's, you know, you got to have just approaches and you get through it.
Sometimes I'll see these videos on my social media feeds where it's a specialist and they're talking, say a cardiologist, and they say, okay, here are three things that I wouldn't do if I wanted to protect my heart. Do you have any practical advice for people when it comes to avoiding eye injury or keeping their eyes healthy?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess it's topical to say there's about to be an eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
Don't stare at the sun.
Okay.
And the thing why people all say that is you'll burn a little hole in your retina if you stare at it nonstop. I don't think that's actually that common. I certainly have never seen an eclipse starer come in with a problem like that. Usually people are, you know, on like meth or something and they're psychotic or whatever.
Oh.
They're just staring at it. But most people, their natural reflexes will stop them from doing that. I listened to your piece about kids not staring at the sun, and I think Darwinianism usually wins out there.
No kidding.
So you agreed that it was soft, hey?
Oh, BC soft for sure. But I mean, when they stare at the sun all day because they only get like 10 days of sun out there.
Right?
Yeah. But just not smoke. The basic thing would be just, you know, wear sunglasses, don't smoke. Everyone's like, oh, smoke can give you lung cancer, but it's a really, really bad for macular degeneration.
Interesting.
That's just an easy one.
Are there any other real high-risk eye activities that you wouldn't recommend?
I mean, eye injuries happen in all kinds of weird ways. Bungee cords.
Ah, really?
Bungee cords are bad.
Oh.
Because people, you know, everyone in Canada knows what a bungee cord is.
Yeah.
You pull on it. And for some reason, you always just happen to pull it, like, because you're watching it, you know, right in line with your, let me line this up. You slip and then you got this metal sharp hook coming straight back at what you're looking at.
Man.
And
that would be awful.
Yeah. Big ratchet strap guy over here.
Yeah, no kidding, hey? Would you just ballpark, what would somebody in your field make roughly? What would the range be?
Yeah, we're remunerated well. But it's totally, even within our, you know, it's quite variable.
Yeah.
You know, we're just well-paid public servants. So it depends how hard you want to work and how many people you want to see. And part of that is to, you know, how efficient you can be. And that's why we have to work quite a lot. You know, some people can make lots of money just by making, you know, one big deal a month, but if we don't work, we don't make any money. Mm-hmm. So we have to employ to be efficient. You know, we have like 30 staff, extremely expensive equipment that keeps having to be replaced because companies aren't dumb. They charge you huge service plans. And so to run the operation, we have to work a lot just to break even. And then if you work a lot more after that, then you can do quite well. But some people who, you know, they'll work a few days a week, and like any job, the more you work, the more you can make. But we have quite a big threshold we have to hit. Otherwise, you could just barely make anything.
So high cost and high potential to earn too?
Yep.
I've seen the list that the Alberta government posts with all the different specialties and the average earnings for those specialties. And I think ophthalmologists are at the top. Are those numbers accurate?
Yeah, I don't know. We're often at the top or near the top. And often a lot of those numbers are based on gross revenue.
Okay.
So they're just the raw billings. And they don't often include that very, very high overhead. For instance, to some of the top billers, they're people in the retinal field, but they have to carry equipment that, you know, is $150,000, and you have to replace it every few years. It's, you know, 50 grand a year, just, and they have multiple of these. And so you're seeing a high revenue, but again, it's all private. Whereas a lot of specialties, all their infrastructure is, you know, at a hospital. Whereas ophthalmology, it's things that privately you have to carry it. You have to be a business person. You have to run your staff, everything. And you're seeing the high numbers that are gross revenue, not necessarily, you know, what this person brings home.
Okay. Because I think like in the lists I've seen, radiologists are kind of right behind you guys, but they would be like their infrastructure would be covered, is what you're saying?
Probably the radiologists you're seeing with high income are also in that same boat.
Okay.
That they probably own some of their own MRI machines and things like that.
I know one of the cool things about, you know, the earning potential of your job is that it's allowed you to do some things that you really enjoy outside of ophthalmology. So what else are you into? What are your other passions?
I mean, it's all over the map, but I'm a pretty creative person, and currently I'm on a project. I'm making a movie, and I guess it's very timely as well because Alberta's, you know, starting to boom a little bit. You know, The Last of Us was filmed here, so I'm... Mm-hmm. I'm wearing actually lots of hats on this project, but I'm the executive producer. It's a 95-minute feature film. I acted a little bit. I was working on the set design, modifying some of my cars. I like working with my hands, you know, as a surgeon, but, you know, woodworking and all that. So, yeah, I'm producing a movie, talking about, you know, we set up a high capital for things. Finally, me and my partner are starting a new eye center called Clearview Eye Center, and it's actually going to be in a new building that we, you know, rezoned and turned into a medical building.
That's awesome.
So yeah, in the movie industry, land development, I have patents that I work on, kind of the further end of the research I did before.
Patents related to ophthalmology?
Yeah, there's some that are, you know, none of them have actually, my partner has had a couple that have succeeded, but some are ophthalmology related, some are, you know, molecular biology. They're very science, you know, related things.
Okay, when I hear patent, I think like, oh, he's working on a new flying machine.
Yeah.
You know, it's not nothing like that.
No, I'm not like, I got a new space shuttle. Sweet, yeah. Cool. No, it's like way, you know, novel ways of, you know, measuring eye pressure without touching the eye. And
right.
Using ultrasonics. And I mean, as you work, it's a very scientific field. Like if in the advancements in ophthalmology, another thing I love is it always is moving ahead very quickly. And as you work, as you do surgery, you kind of can identify things like, man, it'd be really great if this. And then, I mean, if you just, I have like quite a broad friend base. And if industry could actually, you know, crosstalk more, ophthalmology has taken a lot of their innovations from like dentistry, like ultrasonic probes and things like that.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting.
So there's lots of ways that, you know, something that someone solved in one industry is totally applicable to, you know, others, but they don't crosstalk that often.
I mean, I know you guys make good money, but also how much does it cost to do all the schooling that you had to do?
Well, it wasn't bad for myself.
Okay.
Back when I went to school.
Right.
I can remember still that it was like $6,000 for my tuition per year for a year of medical school.
Wow. Okay.
So I'm not sure what it is now, but then I went to school in Alberta. I'm from here.
Yeah.
And some people go to school in the States, and I think it's like $30,000 US per year plus living there and other, you know, expenses.
Yeah.
So
you can do it semi-affordably though.
Well, if you took a time machine back, but even, even nowadays, the barrier to entry is not going to be your tuition. You're going to make enough money to pay that off. It's the time commitment.
Right.
Not just 13 years of school, but, you know, preparing yourself for that kind of, journey, I suppose.
That's some good advice for any young people listening who are thinking that maybe this career path is for them. I know you got to see patients here, so we'll let you go. Dr. Ryan Yao is an ophthalmologist, a movie maker, a man of many interests. Thank you for your time today, hey?
Thanks. Have a great day. Enjoy the eclipse.
The Beckler and Shauna Podcast.
I got a message from friend of the show, Mark. And he said, you guys have to dig up that bit on the fake birds at the Masters from a few years back, since the Masters are fast approaching. I tried to Google it and find it, and there are so many posts and videos on it. So the Masters do start on Thursday this week.
Yeah, they do.
But I didn't have any recollection of what Mark was talking about, because we have terrible memories in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
I did go through our archives, and we talked about a conspiracy where some people believe that the birds that you hear chirping on the broadcast are fake. It's like sound that's piped in to make the course seem more idyllic, and that they actually paint the grass in some places and dye the ponds.
Mm-hmm. And that's because I remember listening, because I don't watch the Masters all that often, but I remember a while back, I was watching the Masters, and I remember the birds were super loud.
Yes. So we also talked about that a few years back, and I found that segment that we did.
Okay.
And that's the one I want to play for you here.
I was watching a bit of the Masters yesterday, and there was this bird that was just friggin' screaming throughout the whole thing. And the thing is, as you know about golf, the announcers are very quiet. They whisper, right?
Yes.
So this bird, once I heard it, I could not unhear it. And it was the most distracting bird. Like, I don't know what was going on with it, if it was angry about something or it was mating. I tried to record this. This isn't a great recording, but it maybe gives you an idea. Just
Masters. Sunday.
They're trying to talk, and all I can hear is this bird. I'm just like, I don't even know what you're saying. This annoying bird just won't shut up.
And depending on what kind of bird it is, there might be rules as to what they can or can't do.
Well,
to get the, like, can we do something about that bird?
That's what I was thinking. I was like, if I was the organizer of the Masters, I would have tried to do something. I would have tried to silence this bird or something. Tiger Woods made birdie on this hole last time around. Gonna look to do it again.
Although the wind has picked up significantly and will be a factor from the tee box.
This is one of the world's most famous golf holes, the shortest par three in the course.
The Beckler and Shauna Podcast.
We make fun of Vancouver for being soft all the time.
Yes, we do.
Just the weather there's a little bit milder. So when, you know, we get minus 40 and they're complaining because they're getting like a centimeter of snow. I mean, there's reasons for this. Also, this is really funny. My brother-in-law, he works in the army out in Vancouver, and a guy came to his unit recently and was talking about how mild the weather was and said the words Vancouver soft. And I've talked to my brother-in-law, and he's heard our bits and everything. Mm-hmm. And he looked at this guy, and he was like, where did you hear that term? And the guy was like, well, I used to live in Calgary, and there was this radio station there that... So he was laughing. He was like, are you kidding? Because he's like, we just don't hear that term that often here. So I was like, where did you hear
that's
that?
That's great. Sure? Oh, I love to hear it spreading.
So that's great.
Yeah.
But also, I need to call us out for being soft, because I've seen a few posts about the thunderstorm we're supposed to get today. And people are being a little soft about a thunderstorm. I understand we don't get that many thunderstorms, but there's no need to be as soft as I've seen some people being.
What
about
are people
this.
Saying about the thunder? Because we need the moisture.
We do.
Let it rain.
There was this post that was posted yesterday, and there were a ton of comments on it. And there were things like this. Somebody said, I may try and take a nap during that time. Somebody else was like, oh, no, my dog is going to be so scared. Someone else was like, oh, great, flooding. And someone else was like, I'm going to try and work from home tomorrow.
Because of a thunderstorm?
It's a thunderstorm. What?
flooding.
Flooding.
Like, no, we're looking at a drought in southern Alberta. Mm-hmm. What we need is a lot of rain.
Yeah, they were talking about the underpasses, though, right? Like, rain, it'll cause a flooding in the underpass.
It's just a thunderstorm.
Holy man.
My dog will be scared.
Mm-hmm.
Your dog's a bitch. Your dog is descended from wolves.
They are afraid. I get it. Dogs are afraid of thunderstorms. They get very scared about it. But again, like, it's a thunderstorm. Vancouver would be laughing. Like, if they read this, because they get thunderstorms all the time. It rains there all the time. There's lots of thunderstorms. We can't let them see this, guys.
No. Take those comments down before they get a whiff of it.
I might actually reach out. I should go and find that post again, and I'll reach out to the administrator and be like, I think we need to get rid of this, okay? Nope.
We're looking pretty soft in front of Vancouver here.
This is not looking good.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
I hadn't heard this story yet, but a few weeks back, Florida signed a law that will ban people under 14 from having social media accounts and require parental consent for kids 15 and 16 years of age to use social media.
I hadn't heard this either.
No, it flew under my radar somehow. This
interesting.
Was back at the end of March. And it was signed by Governor Ron DeSantis, and he and the other lawmakers say that social media contributes to mental health issues in kids and that the platforms are used for bullying and for sexual crimes against minors. But apparently this law is quite polarizing, and it's been tried in, I think, three other states and ruled unconstitutional.
Interesting.
So now we'll see if Florida will actually be able to go ahead with this or not and place restrictions on social media platforms to verify the age of their users.
Right.
And there's even, I think, fines for parents who are deemed to have not taken steps to prevent their kids.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I was going to see what you thought of this, Shauna. How do you feel about legally restricting minors from accessing social media?
Honestly, I think minors getting off social media is a good thing. Although, when it comes to, you know, taking away people's freedoms and what they can and cannot do, I understand why people would have an issue with this. But truly, like, I think it is. I don't think there's any good, really, that comes with social media. Very little, if there is.
More bad than good?
I think there's definitely more bad than good, and it seems to be getting worse.
It's interesting. I was listening to an interview with the director for the Center for Free Expression at Your Old University, Toronto Metropolitan University, and he was arguing that there isn't much research linking mental health issues with social media use in kids. And that he thinks because so much of a person's life exists online now, to restrict that in kids is to take away their ability to communicate.
And that's an issue as well.
I don't see how there couldn't be some correlation between social media use and mental health issues in kids, because I can see the effect that it has on adults, let alone kids who aren't as well equipped to deal with all the problems that come along with social media. So I don't see how that's possible.
That's why I was going to say, when it comes to the research, I find that hard to believe, but there's probably not a ton of research that's been done yet directly correlating that. So that might be why he's saying that.
Because it's a fairly new phenomenon?
It is a fairly new phenomenon, but I think we're becoming more and more aware of it all the time. And there's all of these stories about people who have been bullied and how awful and what has happened with that. And I'm just, I don't see much benefit to it. And I truly see it getting worse. And as you said, like, I see what happens with adults. And I have friends who just, like, won't stop scrolling. And I have people who get really caught up in what's... And I do with work, because we have to post a lot for work. And it really mentally does do some things to me.
Like, Shauna, I know people whose social media has, like, broken.
Yeah.
And they're adults.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you, but I'm always hesitant to, like, hand over more... Yes. control of our lives to the government. And how would they actually implement this? Like, how it'd be so easy to skirt around that for kids,
totally.
Wouldn't it?
Yep. And that's the thing, is the concept of it, I kind of agree with, because I truly do think it's bad for kids. On the other hand, yes, this is the other thing, is when it comes to the freedoms that we are now taking away and how you're actually going to implement it, I'm not sure how that's going to happen.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
When it comes to the argument of restricting someone's freedom, what would you say to comparing it to the fact that we already restrict minors from accessing, or we try to restrict minors from accessing other things that we've deemed harmful to them?
Yep.
Yeah, alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, pornography.
Even, I mean, the alcohol websites, right? They say, are you the dumbest? Are you 18?
Yes or no?
And just, what is that doing?
Yeah. Oh, they've honestly done their due diligence.
Yep, they sure are.
Or even when it asks you to put your birthday in. I remember being, I remember being a kid on the internet and be like, well, I'll just, I was born in 89. I'll just put I was born in 79.
The dumbest. Like,
I'm not that dumb.
One of the dumbest things I think we've ever tried to implement. Anyway, so we do try. And I mean, maybe that's good because it does at least make you think briefly about it or make you slightly aware. But I don't know. Like,
so much of the onus, I think, is on us as parents to teach our kids how to navigate the internet. But there's only so much you can do.
I was going to say that's easier said than done. Like, I agree with that in many ways, that parents, of course, should be teaching their kids how to navigate life in these ways. But when it comes to social media, like, it's just such a mess. And there's so much that as a parent, you, no matter what, you can't see, you can't track everything that's going on in social media. Like,
and the algorithms are so powerful.
It's
terrifying.
They're
so much more powerful than we are.
Yeah. And like, and with AI and everything that's going, like, it is nuts what is happening.
Yeah.
And how creepy it is and how much they're targeting your kids right now. Like, it should not be allowed. If you were to go back in the back end of some of these websites and see what they're using, what information they're doing, and how those algorithms are working, I think everybody would be mortified.
Would be terrified.
I think you'd be like, this is not, no.
And even, you know, someone like myself who is vaguely aware of it, and I'm sure every parent with kids that are of that age are facing the same problem.
Yeah.
It's like, we know it's not good. We know this is going on. But to be the one parent who says, no, you can't be the one on social media.
I know.
Isn't, thankfully, my kids aren't quite at that age yet, but it's like, are you going to be the one who, you know, takes away your kids' social life, who isolates them because everybody else? It's an awful position to be in.
It really is. Yeah.
For a parent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe by the time my boys get that age, people will be over social media. I don't know what else I'll do. Like, you know, even now, like, they play like Roblox online.
Yeah.
And they play with a couple of their buddies from school. And, you know, Bo was like, oh, my one buddy blocked me. And I was like, well, like, damn, man. Like, what do we do about this? You know, like,
why did he block him?
Like, yeah, I don't know. But it's just,
yeah,
you know, this kid is, stuff, I know, or whatever. But it's like, you should, it's already starting, like, even through something like that. Yeah. So,
yeah. No, I don't think it's good. From everything that I've seen and any kid I have seen on social media, it's not been good. I don't, again, there's so little that's positive about it. I get that, you know, to communicate with kids, that's a good way of doing it. But guess what? Texting still is too, like, phoning, seeing them in person. Yeah, as a parent, I don't. It's such a difficult position to be in. I do not envy parents in the way they have to navigate through the social media landmines that are all over the place.
It'd be nice to just go live in the woods, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Just go live in a place with no internet. Even then, there's still Starlink now, right?
Oh, that's right.
God.
That's right.
Yeah. I was so sad. We've talked about this before, but I go cat skiing every year, and it used to be where there was no internet where we'd go. Because you go into this remote lodge and get dropped off, and I loved that. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is amazing.
It's part of the draw, hey?
That was part of it. 4 days of, honestly, you could not get a hold of me. I mean, there's emergency sat phones if we needed that, but, like, no one could get a hold of me outside of that, and it was great. And then they just got Starlink.
Really?
So the internet got so much better. It was like, oh no. Yeah, it was just like, that sucks. Luckily, it was still a little iffy in certain places, and I just turned it off. I was like, I'm going to pretend it still doesn't work, because no, I'd rather not.
They should give you the option at a place like that to check your phone on the way in.
Yeah.
And then you can access it if there's an emergency, like you said.
Totally.
Here, I'm here to relax and enjoy nature. Check my phone also.
Check your panties.
Check your panties.
Check your panties.
Yeah.
Check your panties.
Check your panties.
Well, if you are going to live out in the woods and you need a home built out there, talk to Shane Homes. I wonder if they could build you like a full-on prepper compound out there, you know?
Yeah.
If you're preparing for the end of the world and you don't want society to find you. I'll have to ask if they do that or not.
I'm sure they would.
Do you guys build apocalypse shelters?
I bet you they do.
Do you offer that with your affordable customization? You can learn more about all of your options through Shane Homes on their website at shanehomes.com. Shane Homes.
Better way to build.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
My boyfriend and I are going to Vegas in a few weeks. My boyfriend Cliff's favorite place ever to go. But last time we went, I wanted to race one of those supercars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's a track there and you can do this and you can go and you can race on this track. And I didn't wind up being able to do it. So now I'm looking back at doing it again this time because I really want to. But here's the thing. I started looking into it a little more and there are so many options of supercars that you can race that I have no idea which one to pick.
You don't have one specifically that you've always wanted to drive?
No, like I'm not a huge car nerd. I love fast cars, but I don't know enough about them to really know the difference.
Okay.
And I'm struggling a little bit because I'm like, I don't want to pick the wrong one. I want to pick one of, if you look at all the options, people are like, really? Of all those, that's the one you chose? I'm going to be really sad about it. So I thought I'd open this up to you because you're a bit of a car person and friends of the show. I know we got some big car people who listen to this show. Yes. And maybe you guys can help me pick which one. I also actually posted it up on a blog recently, like just earlier today as well, that you can take a look at. And it's on our social media, but it has the list of all the cars, so you can maybe narrow it down for me.
Okay.
I have no idea where to start. Should I just list them off
for you? Are the prices different?
Yes.
Okay, so is that going to factor in, or do you just want to pick the coolest one?
No, pick the coolest
one. Okay, let's see what you got.
Okay, so there's the Lamborghini Huracan.
Yeah.
There's three different types of it, though.
Okay.
The STO is the most fancy of all them. Ferrari FA Tributo, I don't even know how to say that. There's the Ferrari 488 GTB or the 488 Pista.
Okay.
Says Pista. I like that. Then there's Porsche's, like the 718 Cayman GT4 RS. There's the Porsche 992 GT3, Porsche 991 GT3. I don't know the difference between those ones.
Okay.
McLaren.
Okay.
570S in there as well.
Cool.
There's a couple Corvette options.
Okay. I know what my are those all the options?
Nope. Well, a couple more.
Kay.
Aston Martin Vantage F1.
Yeah.
A Maserati MC20. And then there's like an Acura NSX and a Dodge Charger Hellcat.
Okay.
So that's pretty much it.
So I guess it depends on what you're into.
What?
Do you like Italian vehicles? Do you like American muscle? Do you like? I know what I would,
what would
pick
you
of
go
those
with?
Ones. I've always loved McLarens, so
okay.
I would maybe take that 570.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I've heard on the car forums that I'm part of, like the most, one of the best driving experiences is in some of those Porsches.
Okay.
Just the way that they handle and the way that...
Interesting.
Yeah, and like I've never driven any of these vehicles, so I don't know. I'm going based on what I think would be cool.
Yeah.
I don't think you could go wrong with any of them by the sounds of it.
Sounds like probably not.
But I would take... Yeah, those would be my choices. Maybe that Porsche 991 GT3, was that the one?
Yeah.
Okay, that one or the McLaren would be my choices.
Okay, because this is the thing. When I saw McLaren or an Aston Martin, I was like, when else would you ever drive one of those, right? So those ones kind of, I zoned in on that at first. But then there was lots of people, because I posted this on Facebook, that were talking about Ferraris and how nice they sound and how good they hum and
purr. Yeah, that's, and like, they're so expensive, right? It's very unlikely that you'll ever drive one of those. I mean, the Corvettes are fast and stuff, but you'll have a better chance of driving one of those in your life than...
That's just it. The most expensive one is the Ferrari 488 Pista,
okay.
I guess, which is $390,000 if you wanted to buy it. Goes 211 miles an hour, 710 horsepower. So that one, if you wanted to go with price alone... I was thinking that's interesting. There are some others that are up there, though, like the Lamborghini Huracan is, too.
Yeah, right? That'd be cool, too, to say you've driven a Lamborghini.
Yeah. See, this is...
I don't think you can go wrong, Shauna.
Oh, God.
I don't think you can make a bad choice here.
I might have to put it all in a hat and just draw it out of a hat and be like, that's what we're going with.
The Beckler and Shauna podcast.
I saw another thing you can't look cool doing yesterday.
Okay.
I was leaving the station after our shift. Well, actually... I achieved the rare thing where we were out the door before 10 o'clock.
Yes.
Which is,
it's very
you have to be
rare.
Very organized to,
yeah.
to be on the way to
There's
the vehicle.
There's a lot of multitasking that goes on to make that happen.
To be out the door before the show is technically over.
Yep.
But anyway, as I was waiting across the street, I saw a girl driving down the street picking her nose.
Mm.
And you really can't look cool doing that.
Nope.
Hot girl, hot car, two knucks deep in her schnoz.
Mm.
And there's really no way to make that look cool.
People often forget that you can see through windows in vehicles. I don't know. If it's really quite something. Like, we go into our own vehicles and we're like, we're in an oasis and nobody can see us.
Right.
We can all see you.
We can all see you.
Yeah, that's part of what a window is that people can see in. So
maybe it's because we sing loudly in the vehicle by ourselves because you feel like you're alone.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's fine. No
you
one
can't
hear.
Quite hear it as much.
We can see.
We can see you, but pick your nose. I also, as we're talking about this right now, guaranteed there's at least five people listening who are picking their nose as we talked about. Are like, oh.
Or just slowly lowering their
fingers.
Lowering
their fingers as if they're not going two knucks deep
good.
Into their schnoz, as you called it.
Then we have provided a public service here because it doesn't matter how hot you are, like this girl, it just does not look cool.
Yeah, I'm looking at the vehicles that are passing to see if anyone's picking their schnoz right now.
Nope.
But not, no. She's got two hands on the wheel. That's good. Yeah.
Nope.
Just a reminder, if you are tempted, if you do keep your two hands on the wheel, that will prevent you from picking your nose for everybody to see.
There's that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think everybody does it, but we all pretend we don't. It's because it's terribly uncool to see, isn't it?
It is. It really is. Yeah. There's the odd time where you do have to get the gold out of there, right?
Yeah.
Got to dig a little deeper in there, but.
Not even Lenny Kravitz could look cool digging. Picture Lenny Kravitz.
Picking his nose.
With a finger up his schnoz. Doesn't look so cool anymore, does he?
Nope.
You've been listening to the Beckler and Shauna podcast.
Brought to you by Shane Holmes, offering affordable customization on your new home.
You want more? Then tune in to X Mornings with Beckler and Shauna live on Calgary's Alternative. X92.9, Monday through Friday, 6 to 10 a.m. Mountain Time at x92.9.ca. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and have Beckler and Shauna downloaded daily to whatever device you use.